Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Investing with IBD podcast. It's Justin Nielsen here, and the date is January 25th, 2023. And as always, I have Arusha Pieris, portfolio manager over at O'Neill Global Advisors, joining me. How are you doing today, Arusha?
I'm doing well, Justin. It's always good to be here.
Yep. Good to have you, as always. And we've also got, as our special guest today, one of the fan favorites, Joe Fahmy. He is a managing director over at Soar Capital. Joe, how are you doing today?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, and congrats on 200 episodes. That's a huge accomplishment.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot. And so for those of you that don't know, I mean, Joe, you've been on the podcast a number of times. I mean, you're on IBD Live. You're a regular there on our IBD Live show. And I've got to say, your Twitter spaces are just a hoot. I mean, sometimes it's so funny. I mean, they'll sometimes go long, and I forget, like, the time just kind of goes, you know, it's so engaging, you know, the stuff that you talk about on your Twitter spaces. So, yeah, really, you give a lot of great information. So, of course, if people don't follow you, they should absolutely give you a follow on Twitter. That's at jfahmy, F-A-H-M-Y. Definitely good, a lot of good content. And yeah.
And a lot of good jokes.
A lot of good jokes. I mean, Joe brings the humor. Joe brings the humor as.
And a lot of dad jokes too. So you have to take the good with the bad.
Right, exactly. Hey, it's kind of like a market, right? You have your bad days, you have your good days, you know. But if the good outweighs the bad, then you can make some money. So So today we're going to be talking a little bit about the market, of course. Joe's got some kind of lessons about what he's seeing out there, specifically on the tight action and how that can be so constructive for charts. And then he's also going to share with us a few of his ideas. But let's go ahead and start. Joe, do you want to start with the NASDAQ composite here today?
Yeah, let's start with the NASDAQ, because I want to discuss the price action since the end of the year. End of 2022, and over the past few weeks, I've just noticed a little subtle difference in the price action in a positive sense. I guess to sum it up, the up days have occurred on stronger volume, and the down or sideways days have been on lighter volume. So what we want to see coming out of this bear market is the institutions consistently coming back into the markets. So if you start with the recent low on the NASDAQ on December 28th, I believe.
Yep.
We held that low. So you start, we're in a correction. You start counting the lows, part of the, you know, the rules that you have as far as you're looking for a follow through day, looking for signs of the institutions coming in. So we held that low end of the year holiday, you know, slow period. So it's at least good that we held that low. And then when the volume came back in the beginning of the year, I was really curious if it was going to be to the upside or the downside. And thankfully for the bulls, it was to the upside, with a day six follow through day on January 6th.
Right.
So that was that follow through day. But then from there, the subtle character change was that after that follow through day, we held above the 21 EMA for a couple of days. Those next 2 days after the follow through day, we held above it. And to my point earlier, we pulled back on lighter and lighter volume. Why that's a character change is because if you look at the chart throughout most of 2022, that 21 day was resistance. So to get a little bit above that and to hold, even though it was a couple of days, as I said, it's a subtle character change. And then we had an additional follow through type day on, January 11th, like a day nine follow through day right after that. So it's nice to see the institutions coming into the market, not giving it back, coming back into the market. Because let's not forget, this is important to track because the big institutions control the markets and they don't do all their buying at once. You want to see them consistently coming in over a few week period.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, one of the things to your point, whereas it seemed like in 2022, every time we had a follow through day, you were almost immediately tested where we had like, oh, okay, we're going to have the follow through day. And then we undercut the follow through day, like within a couple weeks. And, you know, granted, last week's action wasn't fun. I mean, whenever you have a pullback that sharp, and it did breach the 21 day EMA briefly, but it at least happened higher than what was happening before in 2022, where you had no cushion whatsoever, and then you were just all of a sudden like underwater. At least this was like, okay, you had a little bit of a cushion, so maybe you could weather the storm. But I mean, let's just kind of fast forward to today, and it seems like there's almost like a buy on the dip mentality coming back.
Yeah, that subtle change is showing that instead of that resistance being strength being sold into, we're starting to see the weakness being bought up again. So to your point, we did pull back last week to the 21 day, but thankfully it was on lighter volume. Right. And then last Friday and this Monday, so Friday, January 20th, and this Monday, January 23rd, we almost had follow through type action. Not almost, we did. It was huge mm-hmm. volume on consecutive yeah. days of close to 2%. So that's 4 days since the December 28th low, where it's signs of the institutions coming in. And to your point, we came down close to the 21 day. And again, it's slow and steady. It's a step in the right direction that the dips are being bought and the strength is coming on good volume.
Yeah, and I just wanted to highlight, I'm going to switch over to the S&P 500 just really quickly, because there was a subtle character change on this index too. Every time in 2022, when we came up to the 200-day, that would start off a pretty decent sell-off over the next couple of months. And even at the very end of 2022 this time, you started that sell-off, but within a few weeks, that selling actually kind of stopped, or at least there were buyers holding up. And so really over the last 5-6 weeks, you've almost put in a cup-shaped pattern right underneath the 200-day that it started to emerge from. So it became a lot more orderly and a little bit more of a subtle character change going on with the S&P 500 too.
Yeah, and now that we're above it and we don't have enough data or days to analyze it, but to Justin's point, it didn't get immediately sold off. It's at least trying to find some support near that 200-day on the S&P as well.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we'll get into this a little bit more, but when we talk about tighter action, one of the things that I think is a little heartening about the S&P 500 is what Arusha was saying, how before we used to, you know, come up to the 200-day moving average line, sell off and go to new lows.
Right.
I mean, that's what happened throughout 2022. This time we held and made a higher low. And so you're kind of not getting as much of a pullback here, and you held just so much better.
Yeah, that's a good point that we didn't make a new low, found some institutional support. And then after that institutional support, signs of the selling drying up, they came back in with some decent buying. So again, it's a step in the right direction. These things don't happen overnight, but it's really important to follow and do our best to interpret what the big institutions are doing, whether they're consistently selling or consistently buying. And it's nice to see a little bit of consistent buying over the past few weeks. Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things that is kind of, I guess, hard for some people to kind of wrap their heads around is with a lot of the institutions, they're fully invested. So it's kind of like when they're doing buying, where are they getting the capital? And certainly one of the ways in which they'll get capital is by selling other things. And that's where you get sector rotation. So can you maybe talk a little bit about how we saw the Dow Jones Industrial Average looking so much stronger off that October low, and now things have shifted, and it's like the NASDAQ is back in control. So what happened there?
Yeah, the Dow held up better throughout 2022 because value did better than growth, industrials, because to your point about some institutions have to stay fully invested, they rotated into the safer, lower PE value, industrial, more stable businesses. That's why the Dow did hold up much better. And again, it was a subtle character change. Last week, the Dow was down where the NASDAQ composite was up. Again, it's only one sample size of 1 week, but
right, yeah.
It could be a subtle character change that it possibly, as we're getting towards the end of this rate hiking cycle, money's rotating back into growth. And we did see that last week with the NASDAQ doing a little bit better than the Dow.
Any idea, like, so it is only 1 week, but does it require 2-3 weeks to help you get confidence that the rotation really is on? Have you ever come across anything like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I'd like to see it over a couple of weeks, but the whole point is that if the rally is for real, we will get a nice power trend that could last 6 to 12 weeks. So you'll see those signs over, I'd like to see it consistently over a couple of weeks. I've never really thought of the exact amount of time, but I'd like to see a little bit more consistency. And then, you know, if you like to trade growth stocks, you can hopefully get a sustained rally for a little bit in growth.
Mm-hmm. So since we've covered kind of the gambit with the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the NASDAQ, and the S&P 500, maybe I could just get your thoughts real quick on the small cap index. We a lot of times we'll use IWM, the iShares Russell 2000 ETF, as kind of a proxy for the small caps. And, you know, this was arguably the first one to get above its 200-day moving average line, but it hasn't seemed to quite have as much strength, or has it petered out? What's your take on the small cap market right now?
Yeah, it's definitely the first one to regain, or not the first, but it regained that 200-day versus the NASDAQ and S&P. So right, shorter yeah. term, near-term relative strength, that's good. It came back down to retest that 200-day. It's a sign for me. I mean, in the larger scheme of things, the Russell's not, you know, market cap, not a big section of the market, but it's an indicator of risk on when institutions are putting money into small and mid cap names. Even the MDY is another example in the mid cap 400, how that's acting well, too. So to me, it's just more of an indicator of risk on when institutions are putting money into smaller cap names.
Right. So now on that risk on front, we've got earnings season, you know, so I mean, the next few weeks are going to be really busy. I think what half of the companies basically are going to be having reported within the next week and a half or so. We've got that. We've got the Fed, which has been one of those things that's been looming, that the wall of worry to climb there. We've got more economic data that comes out, and it seems like that jostles the market. So it seemed like for a lot of 2022, investors were getting maybe a little bit too hopeful in terms of, oh, yeah, the Fed's going to stop soon, or, you know, we see the light at the end of the tunnel. Do you think this is another case of that, where it's just a bear market rally? People are getting too excited too quickly, and they're not looking at the downside risks, the recession potentially coming, the, you know, Fed maybe not being done as quickly as they think, and so on.
As far as it's a great question that I want to stress, you can meet halfway, because you can make a case possibly for a new uptrend in a new bull market. But I also see your point that the Fed, even if they might be towards the end of their rate hiking cycle, they're still going to keep things restrictive to fight inflation. And it feels like every time people got their hopes up, a hawkish tone would come out of the Fed to knock the market down. So right. I think you can meet halfway, meaning instead of buying 100 shares, you can buy 50. That way, if things go higher, you at least own some. And then if we see some downside, you don't get hit as bad. So it's a point I always like to stress. Whenever you're getting into a position or out of a position, it doesn't have to be all or none. You can scale your way in and out to help deal with some of those uncertainties that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there a point where you might think to yourself that, you know, there's just so much noise out here, or I mean, there's just so much macro kind of things going on, kind of like what Justin was just talking about there, where you just almost hit a threshold and say, you know what, let me just focus on what's actually happening in the market, the price and volume action, looking for follow through days. Do you ever find yourself just kind of trying to take a step back and focusing on just the simplicity of price and volume, where it's going to really in many ways tell the true picture?
Yeah, that's actually what it's a great reminder. That's what I get caught up. We all do in the discussions in the macro, and you can overthink things.
Right, right.
The macro picture, I mean, you're really going to understand equities, fixed income, currencies, commodities, and how they all intertwine in 195 countries. It's impossible. So right. You end up overthinking things too much. That unless you're running a, you know, $10 billion global macro fund, you really don't need to be focused on all of this. And it's a great reminder, the big institutions control the market, keep it simple, price and volume. And to your point, that quote is, don't focus on what you think the market should be doing, focus on what it's actually doing. And price and volume is a simple way to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, when we come back, we're going to get into a little bit more of the tight action that Joe Fahmy is seeing out there, maybe some historical examples of what that's looked like in the past and how that has kind of played out. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Join the Wall Street Journal at the Future of Everything Festival on May 21st to 23rd in New York City, where diverse global newsmakers share unique perspectives on navigating a changing world. Immerse yourself in live performances, explore pioneering technologies, and indulge in the city's inventive culinary scene. As a podcast listener, enjoy 20% off current ticket rates with code PODCAST. Visit wsj.com/FOEF podcast to secure your spot.
Okay, and welcome back to the Investing with IBD podcast. It's Justin Yelsin, your host, along with my weekly guest, Arusha Pieris, O'Neill Global Advisors Portfolio Manager. And our special guest this week is Joe Fahmy, Managing Director at Soar Capital. So, Joe, we were talking a little bit about macro. And again, it was so easy for a lot of people to focus on the macro, just kind of looking for glimmers of hope when the market was not giving you much to be hopeful about. So that being said, while it's not necessary to go so deep on the macro, there is that mantra of don't fight the Fed. So how do you kind of not get too deep into the weeds, but still make sure that you're following what's going on with the Fed and whether they're tightening and restrictive?
Yeah, I think it's important, as you said, you don't have to be a macro expert, but you do need to know the general direction or the cycle of what's going on with the Fed. There's a reason Marty Zwei came up with that expression, don't fight the Fed. And the lesson for me last year is we've heard that over and over, don't fight the Fed, don't fight the Fed. And in 25 years of doing this, it really didn't resonate until the past 5 years or so with me. And I can't think of a better example than after the pandemic. We made those lows March, April of 2020, and the Fed provided one simple word, accommodative, a very accommodative environment where they did bond buying. They purchased more treasuries in the 6 weeks following the pandemic than they did in the 9 years combined from 2009 to 2018.
Incredible.
So that provides tons of liquidity. Bond buying, keeping interest rates near zero, expanding their balance sheet. So when you say don't fight the Fed, what that means to me is when it's an accommodative environment and they're providing liquidity, don't fight that, ride the trend and of course manage risk, but that means lean more towards the bullish side. Now fast forward to the end of December 2021, early January of last year, those three things one at a time were taken away from the markets, where they announced they were going to stop their bond buying, they were going to start raising rates in 2022, and then reduce their balance sheet. So that one word of accommodative switches over to restrictive, where that restrictive environment is, in my view, you can't really assign a percentage to it, but I think is over 90% of the reason we had that bear market in 2022 is because of that restrictive environment. So again, you just need to pay attention to, are they raising rates or are they cutting rates and other accommodative or restrictive measures?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're paying attention, you're aware of it, but then kind of getting back to the topic that we were talking about at the end of last segment, you're still letting the price and volume action be the final decision maker for you and telling you when to get in and slowly pulling in the market when the market's acting right, or continue to push you out of the market when the market is selling off at key resistance.
Yeah, the market's a discounting mechanism, so they could be providing an accommodative environment, but you're starting to see distribution days, so price is gonna override all of that. And fast forward to today, you're starting to see better price action and some of that tighter price action that we're going to talk about. It could be the market anticipating, even though they're raising rates, anticipating the end of the cycle. So to your point, you need to know the bigger macro picture, but at the end of the day, the price and volume overrides and rules everything, in my view. Mm-hmm.
So before we kind of get into the idea of how much tighter things are getting, and by tighter, I'm not just talking about the Fed here, I'm talking about tightness in charts. But you know, for a lot of 2022, I think it was marked by the opposite. There was a lot of extra volatility. And I mean, especially with Fed announcements, CPI data coming out. I mean, you look at the October 13th low that we had, and there was this just huge spread from the low to the high. And I mean, you know, granted it came back, which is great, but man, it really plummeted first. And so there was I think a big sense of, you never knew what direction was going to end the day based on where it started. There was just so much internal volatility. So what does that do for your investments, your style, and everything, you know, cutting losses when you've got such high volatility on specific days?
Well, two things. Taking a step back and looking at key moving averages, just like you don't have to be a macro expert, you don't have to be a technical expert, but you can just look if we're below the 50-day, below the 200-day mm-hmm. on the S&P, on the NASDAQ, what that's going to mean is a little bit of a red light to get defensive. So I would expect higher volatility just historically when we're below that 50 and below the 200. We're below the 200 most of the year on the S&P and rally to certain levels of resistance. So the first point is look at where we are relative to those moving averages and understand we're going to have higher volatility when we're below them. The second point is how you deal with it, as you asked, is either you just have higher cash or lighter positions to keep you from getting chopped up and constantly getting stopped out of things. So mm-hmm. I know O'Neill has a rule, let's say 7% as a stop cutting loss. You could raise that to, you could double it to 14 or 15% if you have half the position. So yeah. Instead of 100 shares at 7%, you could have 50 shares at 14%. It's the same math, but in a higher volatility environment, it gives you a little bit of room with your positions.
And when you say it's the same math, it's basically you're taking the same hit to your portfolio. In that case, you're kind
and
of getting
usually a lot of hit in the bear market. Yeah. So it's just the losses are slower, just more consistent throughout the bear market. But right. Yeah, it's still the same hit. Correct. Mm. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about this tightness that you've been starting to see in charts. So on the S&P 500, you started to see a little bit of tightness of where prices were starting to close around the same range over a few weeks.
Yeah, and my feeling is that as the market's anticipating the end of this cycle and institutions are putting more money to work, tight price action is important, especially on the weekly charts, because two things. One, it could be a sign of the selling drying up beneath the surface. And two, it could be a sign of the institutions accumulating sort of at a magnet at a certain price. So with the S&P at the end of December, there were 3 weeks where we closed roughly around 3840 for three consecutive weeks. So that showed some of the selling drying up, as well as, to your point earlier, when we came down from that 200 day, we started to see support around that range in that low 3850 range. So that was, by doing that simple analysis on the weekly charts, that was a sign that there was potential accumulation and to sort of wake up a little bit to the possibility of a new uptrend coming.
Yeah. So can you kind of talk a little bit about that? You know, maybe tell a story about how that's accumulation. You kind of said it's kind of like a level where they're comfortable buying, you know, but should you be seeing heavy volume there too? I guess this was one of the tricks, because we also had the holidays around the same time. So you got lower volume because of the holidays. So it was almost like, oh, does this price action even matter? There's not much volume. People are gone. So can you just kind of fill in the details there?
Yeah, we did have successively lighter volume because of the holiday shortened week. So I definitely was not skeptical, but I was just keeping that in the back of my mind, figuring when new money flows in beginning of the year, beginning of the month, that we'd get a feel for volume, whether the volume was going to come into the upside or to the downside. But my feeling is, and you guys would know better because you've done the studies, my feeling is that when institutions want to accumulate, they sort of have a magnet with a certain price that they're willing to buy it up to, whether it's with the index or whether it's with an individual stock. So from studying history, I have found that tight price action is to be interpreted as the institutions accumulating beneath the surface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, when you talk about this tightness, and especially in a bear market, the first kind of story that comes to my head is back in 2008, when all these stocks were selling off, and Apple at that point. And I'll switch it over to Apple here, and I'll go back to 2008. But it kind of was really interesting to learn about this, especially after I started to work at the firm. But one of the kind of the key things that Bill O'Neill was looking at in Apple during that time when the markets were selling off in the fall of 2008, he started to notice that there was tightness within Apple over 4 weeks, where it all kind of magically closed around the same price range. So really closed around like 96, 97 for four straight weeks. And so that was kind of the first thing that he noted, that, hey, you know, there's some institutional accumulation here. Didn't necessarily mean that he went and bought it at that point, but he was just kind of, it was just kind of like a check mark that some institutions are coming in here, starting to support Apple. Now let's see if it starts to build some kind of trading range that we can then eventually merge out of, that we can start buying Apple again.
Yeah, and that's a great point. The tightness doesn't necessarily have to be only on the right side of the base or only as they're accumulating and coming back up. There could be signs on the left side and throughout the entire base. So sometimes in your example, which is a great example with Apple, even though it's several weeks, much, you know, whatever, 10, 15, 20 weeks, within that, there was a lot of almost like a magnet. It kept coming back to that price, even on the left side. So that's a tip. It's a tip that the institutions, or could be a clue that the institutions are accumulating, even if it's earlier on in the base.
And I like the term clue, because I feel like in a lot of these cases, you're almost collecting clues. So in the case of Apple, you had that tight action again on the left side. So it was almost like it didn't want to go down anymore. You know, there was such pressure from the market, and you can see on the index chart above, and by the way, this is available on video at investors.com/podcast for those of you that are listening, if you kind of want to just go back and look at this part on video. But we'll try and describe it. You know, the indexes were making new lows after that, and Apple just seemed like it was resisting that. It just seemed like it was, you know, trying not to come down as much, and eventually when the S&P 500 made its ultimate low, Apple was holding up. And so, you know, it started kind of with the clue of tightness, and then followed up with more clues. And then before too long, you've got, you know, I guess maybe the balance shifting, you know, in a way.
My theory is these big institutions have the resources that most retail people don't have, meaning they've done the fundamental work. And let's not forget what happened in 08-09 is two of the greatest, arguably the greatest products of our lifetime, were just starting to roll out with the iPhone and the iPad. So these institutions knew the total addressable market and the potential. So if they're accumulating beneath the surface, it's probably with the objective of a 3-5 year or longer time frame. So I like to say, okay, I don't have the resources to do as hardcore of fundamental work that they do, but they give clues of their accumulation during these corrections.
Just right in their wake.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So maybe we'd shift this back to kind of, are there current examples of stocks that you're kind of seeing this action in? So we talked about Apple as a historical, S&P 500, the weekly tightness that you were seeing kind of around the holidays. What about individual stocks? Anything catch your eye there?
Yeah, there was a couple. United Rentals, URI is a symbol. That's one recently, where as it built the right side of the base, it just had several, and it doesn't have to be 3 weeks tight, 4 weeks tight. It could be five out of six, five out of seven. In this case, as it ran up, it let 10-week catch up to it. Sometimes on the right side of a base, when a stock runs up, it just needs to correct through price or through time. And it corrected beautifully and just held those gains to the point we made earlier. After a nice gain, sometimes they just get sold into strength. This had very, very nice gains along the way. Ironically, they reported today after the close and beat estimates and raised guidance. And I think that, again, to our point of the institutions have done their hardcore fundamental work and they're accumulating it. It's not automatic. You, of course, have to manage risk and have a loss-cutting policy. But my theory, again, is that they know the fundamental story and they're accumulating it. And as long as it's has that tight price action holding the 10-week, it's acting well in my view.
Yeah, and also because it was having the tight price action going sideways while the market was still struggling, you're starting to see more relative strength coming into United Rentals. So you can see that RS line starting to make higher highs, and actually it was getting the blue dot before it even started to emerge out of this really large consolidation, or potentially emerge out of it.
Yeah, so when things were volatile in the fourth quarter, it shows relative to the market that strength by holding up so well, almost like it's waiting around. You know, bases are being formed during corrections. It's just waiting around. Okay, Mr. Market, when you're done correcting, I'm ready to go higher. So that's the encouraging thing is learn to interpret bases and study bases, because bases for the most part are formed during market corrections or pullbacks.
Yeah. And also to go off your, you know, what we were talking about earlier, that institutions have to be invested, you're mostly invested all the time. They might be selling some other stock, let's get out of that stock and let's just park more money into a United Rentals, right? So it might not necessarily even be, it's the best out of, you know, the best out of a batch that they can buy in a really tough market. So they're like, let's just keep parking money. And it's not just one fund, it's many funds saying that. It's like, you know what, this is a good place to just keep slowly building a position into United Rentals. And when the market slowly gets better, this one should do well. And then maybe you can eventually lighten up and get it into more growthier type of stocks when they're really ready to go.
Yeah, as they're rotating maybe out of a weaker position or something that they sell, they might add to a winner or something with better prospects. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So let's take a look at another example, and this is Medpace, ticker symbol MEDP, and I need to disclose that I do have a position in this myself.
As do I.
So maybe you could start with this. This kind of had, and this is one of the things that on MarketSmith, for those that are looking at the video, you will see this kind of little blue shading when there's tight weeks. You know, it's just a very subtle blue shading, and MedPace had two. Now, first of all, it had this huge move on its earnings report. I mean, it was like up 40%. But more importantly, it kind of held that. And I guess what I want to kind of have you talk a little bit about is it felt like there was a lot of stocks that were showing 3 weeks tight before, but then they'd go lower, they'd get knocked down. It seems like there's more 3 weeks tights forming now where you see an upward move, or at least you have for a week or two. Is that what you're seeing too?
Yeah, the tightness is in the example that Arusha gave with Apple, who's on the left side of the base while we were still correcting. If we're slowly starting to come out of this, now you're right. You're seeing tightness, and then it's stair-stepping higher with even more tightness. So the tightness overall is not just on the left side of the base, not just as you're building the bottom of the base or the right side, is as a subtle character change, as things hopefully start to break out, you start to see it hold in that level, another sign of health that strength isn't being sold into. It's actually being accumulated after the breakout. So it's a great point that you're starting to see some tightness as we're moving higher as well.
Mm-hmm. And this is another one. Arusha mentioned the blue dot, which is the relative strength line getting to new highs. I mean, it jumped to those new highs on the earnings report. But again, this was one of those cases where the tightness, and I think you mentioned this earlier before, Joe, that sometimes it's kind of nice because it lets the moving average lines kind of catch up a little bit and, you know, take that breather.
Yeah, so it ran up huge off of those earnings, unexpected, better than expected. So that's another reminder during corrections. Let's not forget, we tend to have a lot of recency bias that everything is horrible. Let's not forget there are newer entrepreneurial companies that are flourishing in a corrective environment. And as soon as the correction is done, those could be the ones that move to new highs. So they had better than expected earnings. It pulled back. But during the pullback, while the market was volatile, there was a lot of tightness in the bottom of the base. It stair-stepped higher, a little bit above that 10-week. So that's double supportive action where it's being accumulated and holding that 10-week. And then it's just slowly stair-stepping higher. So again, there's no certainties in the markets. I always like to talk in terms of probabilities where when you see that, it just increases your probabilities of something working out when you see the institutions accumulating it combined with the earnings and sales growth.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of glad you mentioned that, you know, there are no certainties, because you could have the best stock in the market in the best industry group and the greatest bull market ever, and it still could fail. And so that's why we always do have that sell rule just to get us out, you know, because they're, for whatever reason, you know, these stocks can go down and risk management is the top priority.
Right, but if you're buying it, that's a great point. If you're buying it around that tightness and around a flat area where you see a defined range, your risk management can be if it breaks below that range rather than buying it when it's straight up in the air and not buying it properly. So those bases, even though they might not work, gives you a range to at least set a stop around that range.
Yeah, and I mean, having those risk management rules in place and kind of a signal that, hey, this is breaking my expectation, because if it were doing the right thing, it would hold here. And if it's not, then you have a clear signal that you can just get out. Now, just to kind of wrap up this section, you know, we're seeing more tightness. We're seeing a lot of stocks kind of come up to previous resistance levels. We're seeing that in the indexes. We're seeing that in individual stocks. I guess the fear is that they come up to those resistance levels and get turned away again. So what are you looking for going forward in terms of giving you more confidence that, hey, this time it's for real, it's not just one of those bear market rally fakeouts?
Yeah, I think one difference is between now, I'm subtly noticing more stocks working out. So beneath the surface, we want to see more stocks breaking out on good volume, holding their breakouts, and the broader the sectors, the better. Mm-hmm. So let's not forget, we tend to live in a very impatient world where everyone's expecting, hey, are we going to new highs tomorrow, or are we going to break down? I would just like to see slow and steady progress, meaning breaking above those key moving averages on the indices, with individual stocks breaking out, holding those levels, and sideways digestion would be healthy. And then hopefully a whole crop of stocks start to set up. But it's slow and steady. It takes a little bit of time. Let's not forget, even off of the March of 09 lows, some of the true leaders like Baidu and Apple and even Chipotle later on, they didn't come until a few months afterwards. So in other words, if the rally's for real, there'll be plenty of time and more stocks showing up.
Mm-hmm. And to that point, when we come back, we're going to take a look at some of the stocks that are on Joe Fahmy's radar right now. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your Money Briefing will explore what you need to know to become a homeowner and how to sustain your home by learning ways to manage the costs from unexpected expenses.
You're basically always in a state of checking. You're always keeping your eye open for anything that could be going wrong with your house. Your house is a complicated machine. It has a lot of systems and components in it, and those systems and components are getting older. They're wearing out.
You can get early access to our series, Buying a Home and Keeping It, on WSJ Special Access. Only for WSJ subscribers.
Welcome back to the Investing with IBD podcast. It's Justin Nielsen here, along with Arusha Pieris, O'Neill Global Advisors Portfolio Manager, and our special guest, Joe Fahmy, Managing Director at Zor Capital. So we kind of talked a little bit about the markets. We've talked a little bit about this tight action that can really help you find some of the winning stocks, that tricky silent accumulation that's happening. So now let's talk about some stocks that may be on your radar. So Joe, do you want to start? Where do you want to start?
Yeah, let's start with biotech, because I screen the market every night to get a true feel for the market and what sectors are leading and so forth. And I just pay attention to the stocks that are consistently coming up. And biotech has been the most prominent in my screens, with so many biotech names. Like in the past, I've seen a whole bunch of semiconductors show up, and you see, you know, housing stocks in 05, 06. So I'm always looking for sector rotation and themes. And currently, the majority of stocks showing up on my screens are biotech, but a lot of people don't want to deal with single stock risk, or might not want to put in the time for the research, or might not understand a lot of things. So one way for me, and full disclosure, I have a position is in XBI, because it's a way to give you broad exposure to the sector that, in my view, is showing some great strength right now.
Yeah. So let's take a look at it. And, you know, in this case, I mean, look, the biotechs as a group, and by the way, this is one of the largest groups that we have in MarketSmith. We have everything kind of sorted by 197 groups in biomed biotech. What is it, like 800 names in here?
I want to say it's by far the largest.
Yeah. I mean, the only one that is ETF, ETNs, but that's kind of not, that doesn't count, you know, because it's they're all over the place and not really indicative of a group, really. But this was really out of favor. I mean, if we go to the weekly chart to just kind of get a sense of where this came from, I mean, it really peaked, well, basically, you know, back in 2020.
Yeah, February 2021.
Oh, that, I'm sorry. That's February 2021. So that's exactly where we're talking about, where a lot of the growth peaked. I mean, you know, anything that was COVID darling, like Peloton and Zoom Video and so on, that's when they peaked. So we're significantly off those highs. But what to you has changed? Is it XBI itself, or is it the fact that the components keep on coming up on your screens?
Yeah, the reason it peaked, the opposite reason, which I'll get into, is one of the reasons I like XBI, but the first reason is relative strength. So going back to our tightness discussion, while the market was very volatile the second half of the year, I feel like every time I looked at XBI, it was plus or minus a few dollars, around $80. So yeah, the market made that new low into August, September, and XBI just showed great relative strength. The market was volatile again in the fourth quarter. I look at it, it's $77, $83, $80, and it was just super tight around that $80 price range. So while the market made a few lows in 2022, XBI held up very, very well. So the relative strength is the first reason I like it. The second reason is M&A, meaning that a lot of the large big pharma, your Novartis and Pfizer's and Merck's and all the Glaxo and all these big companies, they have pristine balance sheets and tons of cash. They're always looking to put that money to work. And if 2022 is a difficult year, and we saw, I think there were 22 buyouts in biotech and the average gain was 120%. So they're putting money to work because they're always looking to build a pipeline of drugs. And if they put money to work in a difficult environment, when the environment gets better, I think that M&A activity will continue. And the third reason, when we peaked out around COVID, let's not forget a lot of the focus on biotechs were towards vaccines, and a lot of trials were put on hold. So that's why I think biotech corrected more. And now that the trials are back on, we're starting to get some good data. That's another reason why I like the sector.
Yeah, and when really a lot of times when I just look at this chart, and we've talked about this, Justin and I have talked about this in some other episodes, but this is the first time in over a year, really a year and a half, where it's actually picking up a pattern. That 80 yeah. area that you were talking about, oscillating around there, it's gone sideways long enough for pattern recognition to recognize a pattern and calling it a cup with a handle. And so that is pretty significant. And that goes back to what we were talking about in the first segment, where you're starting to see a little bit of a subtle character change going on here. And that money, that accumulation that seems to be happening within this area is starting to be picked up on the chart and starting to result in a pattern.
Yeah. So recently, if you want to expand that range, I said around 80, let's say 75 to 85 was the rough range for a while. To your point, recently we got above that range on decent volume. Mm-hmm. And now going back to that word tightness, we're starting to consolidate rather than having it drop right back into the 80, 78 range. We're starting to consolidate a little bit higher in that 84, 85 to 89 range. So it's another character change. And it's a great point that you make, where not only the pattern recognition, but clearing those levels and so far holding it is at least showing some strength. So it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, and a great example of tightness. But I also wanted to ask you, so why XBI? There's also IBB. So XBI is kind of the S&P biotechnology index is what that's tracking. IBB is tracking the NASDAQ biotechnology index. Now, there's a big difference in the holdings, you know, the top 10 holdings of XBI, you know, it's just more spread out. So your top 10 holdings are less than 10% of the weight for the entire ETF, whereas for IBB, what is it? The top 10 holdings are like 50% of the ETF. Do you have a preference? You know, most people talk about, hey, concentration, you know, either go big or go home, you know, but XBI is certainly more spread out. What's your preference here?
I like them both. I like XBI a little bit better because it is equal weight and you have a little bit more of those small and mid-cap names. To okay. your point, you can just Google the components of them both. You'll find IBB has a larger concentration in Amgen and Vertex and some of the larger big pharma names, Biogen and so forth. I think there's better opportunity in some of the small and mid cap that has more equal weight. So I think they're both acting well. I just, it's more of a preference for me, but you know, I'm okay with either one if people want broad exposure to the sector.
Yeah, very good. So let's see the next one that you had on your list. Go ahead and talk a little bit about that one. Yeah.
Yeah, Revance Therapeutics. So
in the biomed biotech area.
I wanted to give one specifically in biotech. Okay. That's one that's more of a higher conviction name for me. A lot of people, just the first thing you tell people is like, I don't want to touch it. It's biotech. They just have this aversion to it. But number one, hey, do what works for you. If it doesn't fit your risk tolerance, then you can pass. But for me, I like to dig into these companies, not only through resources that I know and on the street following unusual option activity, but what I have found is that those big pharma names, they like to let the smaller cap names go through the struggles of all the phases, the phase one and 2A and 2B trial and going in front of the FDA panels and all that stuff. After the FDA approves their drugs, then I find big pharma can go in and say, okay, you went through all the pain. Now we can come in to help commercialize. We have the sales team and so forth. So Revance just got an FDA approval for a competitor to Botox called Daxxify. And Botox, depending on the numbers you look at, is somewhere around a $6 to $8 billion in sales in 2021, depending on the numbers you look at, with projections to be closer to $14 or $15 billion in the next 5 years. So it's a huge market. And Revance has a product that not only is a better solution as far as the chemistry of it, where it's not as, you know, the chemistry of it, but it lasts longer than Botox, where Botox is about 3-4 months. Their solution lasts 4 to 6 months. So it's less frequent injections. So the reason for the big jump recently is they weren't expecting any sales, and they surprised with about $11 or $12 billion in sales when they weren't, the analysts weren't expecting any. So that's a sign to me that that there's potential in a big total addressable market for their new drug. Mm-hmm.
And is there anything specific? I mean, you're using resources. You know, you've got maybe more resources than Joe Schmo off the street. But when someone looks at, okay, this has some revenue growth, there's no earnings. You know, and sometimes you're looking at these speculative names where they don't even have the revenue yet. I mean, maybe it's milestone payments. So what's your suggestion for people that maybe don't have the chemistry degrees to kind of dig into the science behind some of these and understand, you know, beyond the marketing material?
My suggestion would be to do a little bit of work. I mean, that might be an option. No, I'm kidding. I kind of give XBI for that reason, because I completely understand and respect. People don't want the risk. They don't want they might not understand it. I don't understand certain things either. So when there's so many biotechs looking good, it gives you broad exposure to it. One thing I do follow is unusual option activity. And again, I'm doing this professional. I'm very passionate about it. And I'm noticing they're writing a lot of puts. When I see put writing on biotech, that tells me that for something that's risky, they're willing buyers below certain levels. So okay. When I see big blocks of put writing that I am seeing in RVNC going out to April, and I believe the May or June strike as well, that could potentially give it a little bit of a floor. And another option could be, as I said, to pass or just a lighter position to help deal with the potential volatility or any sort of risk. But that's why I like the names that I do own already have FDA approval for their drugs. Not to say there's no risk, but you don't have to worry about trials coming out that could miss on a p-value of a phase two trial or something.
Mm-hmm. What do you generally consider as a lighter position?
An average position could be 5%. So a lighter position can be 1 to 3, maybe half that. Yeah. And that's a great question. It just depends on people's risk tolerance. Some people, 10% is their full position. Some people, 25. I just say in general, 5% is a good guideline. And let's say you go half of that, or let's say you take a 2% position. If God forbid the thing drops 50%, it's not going to ruin your portfolio. So lighter than what you're used to, but I encourage people to sort of define what their risk tolerance is. For someone younger, it might be a larger position. For someone closer to retirement, it might be a lighter position. But based on what your normal position is, maybe something lighter would be a way to deal with that risk.
Yeah, and also assume that, you know, and throw that scenario in. What happens to my portfolio if this drops 50%, right? Yeah. You always want to kind of think about the worst case scenarios and then look at the results and figure out, can you handle that?
Yeah, to your point, the best traders that you study, they have the same top three rules: defense, defense, defense.
Right.
Cut your losses, cut your losses, cut your losses. So you do have to think, not thinking, okay, well, this stock could go to the moon, and we always think upside. You have to think defensively. What if it does drop 30 or 40%? What position size can I deal with that's not going to ruin my portfolio that I can sleep at night with? And then adjust your positions accordingly.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the unusual option activity. Is there a particular source that you use to kind of recognize that? You know, when that unusual option activity is happening?
Yeah, there's a couple that I use. Options Hawk has great options flow. It's a separate service that I do pay for. Wall Street Jesus, I know it's a funny name, but he also has a separate. I don't have the resources to follow all this, but I use people that have services. There's also other services out there. Those are the two of the best that I've found, where it's almost like a Twitter feed where they are curating the data for you.
Yeah.
And I want to repeat that I only use it if it coincides with something that it's already on my list. So it's a supplemental, something I've developed over the past few years, not just earnings and sales growth and technicals and seasonality and following the institutions, but that's another flavor to help increase your probabilities of success with other people that follow it. And then if it coincides with my work, it might be something that I'll look at.
Or I'm sure it can go the other way too. It might be an idea generator. You're like, oh, hey, this has unusual option activity. And then you kind of kick the tires on it. And you're like, oh, it also has all these other things too.
Yeah, that's a whole other conversation, but you're 100% right. Where if, let's say, there's some software names that are beaten down now, and I know some will come back, some won't, I'm starting to see, if I see consistent flows in them, that might be a way I might mix something up rather than buying something near a high. I might say, okay, you know, now some stock that came down from a 20 to a $4 billion valuation could be attractive to private equity or Microsoft or IBM for a buyout, something like that. So. Yeah.
So we've talked a little bit about biotech. Let's talk about one of the tech areas that has certainly been showing strength this year, and that's chips. And we can go ahead and, you know, take a look at KLA Corp. That's KLAC is the ticker symbol on this. Electronic Semiconductor Equipment Group has been one of, you know, really coming up strong. It's number 57 out of 197, and there's a lot of stocks in this group that are doing much, much better than the average. You know, they're already above their 50-day lines, their 200-day lines. So what is it about KLAC that you like?
So within chips, I'm always paying attention to relative strength during corrections, the stocks that hold up well. Really quick, two examples coming out of 08, 09, Green Mountain Coffee and Netflix were two of the first stocks to make new highs. Again, just not automatic, just helps your probabilities of finding a decent winner. So within chips, while I'm screening, I specifically have found that semi equipment names are holding up better. For example, AMD and NVIDIA are great companies. They're considerably off their highs, where KLAC is holding up much better. So you have the strong earnings and sales growth, which is great. You have the technical relative strength, which is another, you know, just another notch. You just want to try to stack the deck, so to speak. You have that tightness that we were talking about in the charts, where it ran up nicely, and similar to United Rentals, it just went sideways, caught up to its 10-week with some nice accumulation along the right side. You do also have some decent option activity in this one, but bottom line is the relative strength within chips, it's holding up very well. Now, really quick, one of their competitors, Lam Research, ironically, today after the close, they beat earnings and had some soft guidance. I think some of these companies are guiding conservatively, but KLAC is holding up better, and they've already upped their guidance. So of the chip equipment names, this is one, full disclosure, that I own, and I'm just going to use the 10-week as my stop on this one.
And it looks like KLAC is reporting tomorrow.
Yeah. So, yes, they are. KLAC is reporting 26th after the close. Okay. So I've already accumulated a position from a little bit lower, so I have a little bit of a cushion. But I think they're only pricing in like a 4%. It's not like a 4 or 5% move. Doesn't mean that can't be risked, but it's one that I'm just going to use the 10-week as my stop.
And for that expected move, are you just kind of basically taking the at the money straddle price to kind of get that expected move for earnings?
I do look
take
at that
call, to take the put at the money, add them together, and that's kind of the expected point move. It doesn't tell you direction, just tells you kind of the move, right?
It can just help you adjust your position size where when enterprise software was doing well, some of those names had 20-18% expected moves. Microsoft earlier this week, they were pricing in a 4-5% move. So when you look at it, to your point, it's not, you know, you can have an outsized move, but at least it can help you adjust your position. There's a difference between holding, you know, ExxonMobil over earnings and Netflix over earnings and stuff like that. You just have to weigh that risk, and by using the expected move can help you adjust position sizes there too.
Mm-hmm. And one other thing I just wanted to mention on KLAC, because you did talk about the fundamentals on this, and it does have a really strong EPS growth rate, that annual growth rate. You can see that over on the left-hand side on the Marketsmith chart here at 27%. But not only that, but it also has an earnings stability of 12, which is on the lower side. That number goes from 1 to 99, the lower being more stable. So 27%. Growth rate annually. I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at, but the fact that it's able to do that fairly consistently and with a lot of stability to it is pretty impressive.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, the earnings of course matter. It's, you still get a dividend out of it. It's a fairly reasonable, price to earnings for the, considering the growth. So as always, you know, there's always downside to everything, but I like the tight accumulation, similar to URI, where the tight accumulation could hopefully be a sign that the institutions have done their due diligence. And, they've already upped their guidance in their last quarter in October. So I think hopefully it'll come out okay, and we'll see new highs soon.
Yeah, great. Well, Joe Fahmy, thank you so much for joining us again on the podcast for our 201st episode. also, you know, again, for people that want to follow you, go ahead and give them that Twitter handle again.
Yeah, it's at Jay Fahmy, my first initial and last name. They can also go to joefahmy.com, where I have some information. I blog frequently, and you can contact me there if you're interested as well.
Yeah. No, well, and I do want to say, and I've told Joe this, you know, for biotechs, and you saw this with a lot of this episode, you know, Joe is one of those resources that I'll go for biotech information. I've found it really hard to find some good biotech information on stocks, with especially what we're doing. And so going, checking out Joe's blog, or talking to Joe, or listen, watching his tweets, that's always been very, very helpful for me.
Right. Not to mention the educational webinars that you do, Joe. Right. I think those are fantastic as well. So, again, we just appreciate you sharing that knowledge with our listeners and our viewers.
And the jokes,
of course. So, thanks so much for being on again.
Thank you. It's an honor, and thank you again for everything you guys do as well. Thank you.
Okay. And that's going to wrap it up for us on this episode. And next week, we're going to have Anne Marie Band back on the show. I mean, she's one of those great options and just technical analysis. She's got the neuroscience background. Always a pleasure to talk with Anne Marie Band. She's also a frequent guest on our IBD Live show, author of the trading book. And we'll be picking her brain for some options ideas. She's a recent contributor for our options content at investors.com. So we'll be kind of talking a little bit about some of the things she's been doing for us. So hope you tune in for that. Thank you so much for listening to us today, and we hope you have a great trading day. Take care. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast if you haven't already. We'd really appreciate it. You can also send us your questions and comments to investingpodcast@investors.com. We would love to hear from you and may use your comments on an upcoming episode. And for this week's notes and charts, make sure to go to investors.com/podcast, where you'll find details for each episode in the podcast episode section. And make sure to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast if you haven't already. We'd really appreciate it. You can also send us your questions and comments to investingpodcast@investors.com. We would love to hear from you and may use your comments on an upcoming episode. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only, and nothing should be construed as a recommendation to buy, hold, or sell any securities. Make sure to consider consulting with your financial advisor before making any investment decisions.